ที่5ครับโอเคโอเคครับมาสติโกครับแล้วเจอ some people and just finishing off their breakfast. They probably started at 6:30 and they're still finishing it off. Very good. Just cold water or plain water? Water, yes. I don't know why people are waiting for you to come in. It's one of the stories about holy water I like telling people. And that is if ever you go to Australia, it's one of the items you're prohibited from bringing into the country. You can't bring weapons, you can't bring drugs, you can't bring pornography, you can't bring holy water into Australia. It's true. I think the reason why we can't bring holy water into the country, this is the story I heard, that some years ago, there was a gentleman, he arrived at the airport in Perth, and he went through the Green Channel. At the time they had a Green Channel, there was nothing to declare. And the customs officers, they always check somebody at random, and he got chosen. And, "Can you please open your suitcases, sir?" And underneath all of the suits and shirts and dry jumpers, at the bottom they found a bottle of whiskey. He said, "Sir, this is whiskey you didn't declare." And thinking quickly, the traveller said, "Sir, it's not whiskey, it is holy water. I'm a Catholic, I've been to France, and this is holy water from the City of Lourdes." And the customs man said, "Well, why on the outside of the bottle does it say Johnny Walker?" And he said, "Well, I have to put it into something. This is the only bottle I have. So it's holy water, okay? Can I go now?" And the customs officer said, No, I've got to check this first of all." So the customs officer opened up the lid and smelt it. And the customs officer said, "This isn't water, it's whiskey. Smell it yourself." And the traveler smelt and said, "My goodness, you're right. It's another miracle." So since that time, you can't be holy water into Australia in case it turns into alcohol on the way. But that's true. Next time you go to Australia, have a look at the customs form. Another big one. And you find you're not allowed to bring in holy water into Australia. And that's beautiful. Okay. Do we want to do any chanting, or should we just have the talk and maybe some questions and answers? Do chanting in the evening, once a day. Because, I mean, you already have the chanting book, you bring it every time. So we'll just do it in the evening time, not in the morning, until further notice. Until we change it tomorrow. So, okay, you can keep them with you. Very good, okay, we're collecting all the... So, can you please, like in school, can you please pass it to your right, and then the class monitor, Miss Angie Munchfield.
The headmaster said no charge.
That's right, yes. We're charging you today. Very good. Okie dokie. So, now, seriously about some more meditation. Many people, when they start meditating, have difficulty sitting down comfortably. Because you're not used to sitting down for such a long time, except when you're watching the movies. When you're watching the movies, you're perfectly comfortable. You're sitting there for hour after hour after hour. But when it's meditating, sometimes the body hurts. So because of that, now we also have what we call walking meditation. And that's a very popular type of meditation which people, when they first start, if they can't do sitting meditation, they try walking meditation, and it's much easier because you don't have to worry about aches and pains in the body. So what you do for walking meditation, you may have already seen some people doing that here. You find a quiet spot. It can be in this room, you know, during the afternoon or early morning when there's not so many people here, or it could be in the corridor or on the beach somewhere. You just make a little path for yourself, maybe 20 steps. That's usually average, sometimes more, sometimes less. And you start at the beginning of your path. And you put your gaze down about 2 meters in front of you, not to the left, not to the right, about 2 meters in front of you, just to give you the sense of safety. You're not going to step on something or trip over on something. And then very gently, at your natural speed, you walk from one end of the path to the other, you turn around and come back again. And as you're doing the walking, number one, make sure there's no past and no future. So you don't start thinking of where you've come from and all the things which have happened to you in your life. Nor do you really start planning what you're going to do later once it's finished. Number one, present moment awareness. Just be here with the walking. And number two, don't go thinking about all sorts of ideas. Don't write your biography or compose your novel or start thinking about the deepest Dhamma. Shut up. Be quiet inside. And just be there while you're walking. And what you can focus on is just the movement of your legs. So you know first of all which leg is moving, the left or the right. And how it moves. One thing you can ask yourself is when you walk, naturally, not forced, which part of the feet lifts up from the ground first? And which part of your foot is the last to leave the ground? And as you walk, does the foot go straight up? Or does it go backwards slightly? And how does the foot swing through the air as it moves forward? Which part of the foot touches the ground first? Which last? So you're putting your mindfulness on the movements of your legs as you're walking. And once one foot is moved forward, you can feel the weight of your body transfer to that foot, so the other foot can lift up, move forward, and then step ahead. So you're mindful of the feelings in your legs as you are walking, especially the feelings in your feet, which is why it's wonderful to be able to do this without any shoes or socks on, as long as you haven't got smelly feet, so that you can learn just how to walk very mindfully. And when you really get into this meditation, you get very peaceful, then you can try and increase it to the next level, where you go walking on the swimming pool as you walk across the water, and that really impresses the hotel staff. That's only joking, don't try that. But the walking meditation makes you nice and peaceful. One of the reasons why is you're doing the essential present moment awareness. You're being silent, and you're stopping all the thinking, and you're putting all the focus on a simple object with your feet moving backwards and forwards. And the most important thing is just keep the walking natural. You don't have to do slow walking or fast walking. In some retreats, they think the slower you walk, the more mindful you are. So I've seen people on these meditation retreats walking really, really slow. And if someone is next to them walking slower than they are, they get very upset and try and slow down. It is a competition of who can walk the slowest. This has nothing to do with meditation. It's not a competition. If you want to walk fast, walk fast. If they want to walk slow, walk slow. You let your body do the walking. And you're just aware Because the body and the feet move from one side to the other. When you get to the end, you turn around again and go back. The great thing about walking meditation, you don't get anywhere. You end up where you started, which is the meaning of life. It's true, you know, that when you're very young, you have no hair. When you're old, you have no hair. Just like that old story of the two old men sitting down together. And one was in their 80s, and one was complaining, and said, "I'm terrible being old. I've got aches here and aches there. I've got to see the doctor every second day for different ailments. Oh, I really want to be old. What about you?" And his best friend, the same age, "Oh no, that's wonderful being old. I feel like a newborn baby." "But how can you feel like a newborn baby when you're over 80? He said, "Easy. Again, just like a newborn baby, I've got no hair, I've got no teeth, and I just wet my pants. Just like a newborn baby." That's what happens when you get old. You become like newborn baby again. No hair, no teeth, and you keep wetting your pants. So you don't really get anywhere in life, do you? All the stuff which you learn, you'll forget. Isn't that terrible? I shouldn't tell the children that, because they still have to do the learning at school. You'll forget it all. And men and women, I always like this. When they're born, you know, if you don't look at the genitals, you don't know which is a man or a boy when they're born. The same when they're very young. If they didn't wear girls' clothes and boys' clothes, there'd be hardly any difference to them. But when they get to puberty, we change. We look different. But then when we get to about 40 or 50, after menopause and all that, we all look the same. We did do our hair. We're all flat again. Yes, you are. Our hair goes grey just like everybody else. We look the same again. I really quite like that. This whole idea about genders, you know, we start together, we separate off, you know, just for procreation and for marriage and stuff, and then in the end we all come together again. I thought it was really nice. It's no real difference, you know, the old people. So anyway. And we'll say, how old is old? I once asked this question, many years ago, I had a youth group. So I asked these kids, like 10, 11, 12 years old, how old is old? They said, anything over 30. That's all of you. There's only a couple of exceptions. So anyway, so with the walking meditation, just don't get anywhere, which is wonderful, because part of this whole meditation is not trying to get somewhere. You spend all your life doing that, and that gives you so much stress. And when you get somewhere, can you rest? No, you've got to go and get somewhere else. But your life is where you arrive, having to leave again for another destination. Never any stop or pause. Always going on to the next thing, the next exam, the next assignment, the next job, the next thing in life. There's no stopping. Except when you come to meditate. So Ajahn Chah said this is one of those key teachings. We don't meditate to attain things. We meditate to let go of all that, trying to attain. We meditate for peace, not for attainments. To be here, while we're always trying to get somewhere. To just be here. And that's one of the great things of walking meditation. You're not going anywhere. You start over there, you go over there, you go back again. Just like life. Backwards and forwards, that's all it is. And it teaches you, you're not getting anywhere. You don't have to. Because you've already arrived. That's one of the wonderful sayings. When you're successful in life, when you've actually made your fortune, when you've got your great house, when you've got your lovely family and fame, you've arrived. I don't want to work that hard to arrive. I don't want to arrive now. So, I've arrived. This is good enough for me. So that means you don't have to struggle and strive and work hard. You can be peaceful. That's a wonderful thing about meditating. Just learning how to be peaceful. Right here, right now, with what we've got. Stop trying to attain something. So walking meditation is great. You can't attain anything anyway. Just walk about the floors, being peaceful, being here. And then you find everything you really aspire for, you get. Now, I was going to talk also about the breath meditation. Yesterday I talked about being in the present moment. Now you know, that is again enough for any person who wants to get in life. Just being in the present moment, being more in the present moment, deepening present moment awareness, that itself is enough to get you so deep in meditation, being here, being now. Because all of that craving means you have a future you want to aim for. Any ill will is having a past you're upset about. So just being here, there's no defilements possible, no craving, no ill will. You've got nowhere to go, nothing to do. You just stop and become very quiet and still. That leaf stops moving. And all by itself it gets very, very still. However, there's something interesting about the breath meditation. And one of the interesting things about breath meditation, I wanted to find out why was that the object of meditation which was the most popular in Buddhism. Even the Buddha said that's how he got enlightened, by doing breath meditation. What is so special about the breathing? And it was only later on when, you know, I started to experience deep meditations and realize how you do it, it's not aim for anything, not go from one stage to another stage, but just let go and see what happens. But what occurs, you close your eyes, and I mentioned yesterday, seeing disappears. You're in a reasonably quiet room, there's no noise happening, there's no great sounds changing, so after a while you don't hear anything anymore. The nature of the brain is only wired to notice things which change. If things are perfectly still, they just disappear. And again, smell and taste are very easy to disappear. As long as no one passes wind, there's not a change in the smell of this room. That's one of the reasons why people used to light lots of incense in the temples in the old days. These days people are much more healthy, so you don't need so much incense. But the body starts to relax, and the physical feelings and that fifth sense of touch start to disappear because nothing is moving. Because your legs aren't moving, they disappear. Your hands aren't moving, they disappear. Your back or your head is not moving, that disappears. So everything which isn't moving disappears. And so there's one thing left which is still moving. Your breath. And everything else disappears. That's the last thing which is moving. Which is why even if you don't decide to watch your breathing, it's just what happens as you start to become still and as things disappear. Can you hear that tapping outside? You can only hear that because that was moving, that was changing. It was a constant sound such as the aircon. Now you can hear it, a few moments ago you don't. It's only things which change which you notice. So because of that, and everything else disappears, the breath is the only thing left which is moving. Which is why a lot of the times the Buddha taught how to deal with that breathing, to calm it down so it too disappears. So this is basically what happens. As you do your meditation, you're letting go of the time, no past, no future, letting go of the thinking, focusing on what's really happening here. Usually it's maybe sounds, maybe physical feelings in the body, until that starts to get so soft you naturally become aware of your breath. It just comes to you. And I tell people, that's the way I meditate. I never go looking for my breath. It just comes and everything else settles down. Now when that breath starts to come, people sometimes say, how should you watch your breath? Should you watch the breath at the tip of the nose? Should you watch your breath at the belly? Where should you watch your breath? And the answer is, it does not matter at all, as long as you are aware of your breath. So it's nice being a teacher who teaches people who aren't Buddhists, who've never meditated before in their lives. It's a clean slate, so I can actually teach them a very good method which doesn't confuse them, get it right to start with, and it's much easier. I just ask them to close their eyes, breathe in and out three times, and after the third breath, open their eyes. That's all I tell them. And once they've done that, I ask them, how did you know you were breathing in and breathing out? How did you know that? And you know, they don't look at the tip of the nose, they don't look at their belly, they just know they're breathing. That natural way of knowing your breath is what we watch in real breath meditation. If you watch the tip of the nose, you may be in big trouble. Because like me, you may have a cold, you may have hay fever, your nose might be blocked, and you can't find anything there. Because nothing's happening. That was my problem. Actually, not really a problem. It was a great advantage to me. You know, I suffered from hay fever as a kid, so there were certain times of the year I couldn't wash the tip of my nose. There was nothing coming out of that except really yucky stuff. Not red. So, I was a great relief later on. I heard that you could wash the breath in your abdomen. And that worked for a while until I became a monk. And then when I became a monk, you know, late in the afternoon or evening, when I started watching the breath of the abdomen rising and falling, my abdomen was so close to my stomach, I started to get very, very hungry. Oh, I haven't eaten for such a long time. Oh, I'm hungry. And so that never worked either. So instead, I was really, couldn't watch the breath of the abdomen, couldn't watch it at the tip of the nose, until you discovered you don't need to watch the breath at any of those places. Whether I was hungry, whether I had hay fever, I was always breathing, somewhere or other. I always knew the breath was going in, but was going out, or the stop was in between. I could always know that. And I realized that that is the object of meditation, called breath meditation. Wherever it is, however you know, you are breathing in or you are breathing out. That is how we do breath meditation. And please, never watch the breath of the tip of the nose with force, because a gentleman yesterday was asking about headaches in meditation. This is one of the other reasons why people get headaches when they're meditating, because they try to focus on the tip of their nose. Now usually you meditate with your eyes closed, so you don't realize what's going on. I am now going to meditate with my eyes open, watching the tip of my nose. I'll take my glasses off so it's much clearer what's going on. If I watch the tip of my nose, now my mind is going to the tip of my nose, and my eyes are going there as well. Now if you look at my eyes right now as I'm watching the tip of my nose, if I stay cross-eyed like this for much longer, I too am going to get a samadhi headache. And that's where much headaches come from. You've got your eyes closed, but underneath your lids, where your mind watches, your eyes go to as well. So your eyes point to the tip of your nose, you get headache. So those of you who get headache or tension, especially along here, when you're meditating, that is the major cause. Your eyes are focusing on the tip of your nose and getting physical stress. But don't do that, just you know what the breath is doing. That's good enough, you don't have to focus anywhere. And it also has an extra advantage when you stop focusing on your body earlier on and you focus on the breath. It's much easier to let go of the body and to allow it to totally disappear. So you just start by knowing the breath going in, knowing the breath going out. But then you make it even more refined. It's not just going in or going out. You notice the breath from the very beginning of the in-breath, when it just begins. And you notice that sensation change as it gets stronger and stronger until it reaches the peak of in-breath, and then it fades away as the in-breath stops. For me, we all will breathe differently. My breath, as it goes in, it goes very, very slowly, it reaches its peak very quickly, stops and fades away. And then there's a space, a pause between the in-breath and the next out-breath. They don't follow each other immediately. There's a little pause. and then the out breath begins. And as it grows and grows and grows, as you breathe out, it reaches its peak again, and then it fades, for me, reasonably quickly, until the out breath has stopped. And then there's another pause, until the in breath begins again. And anyone who wants to try this, I'm going to give you a test. And people from Singapore and Malaysia like tests. And the test is, I want you to find out which is the longest. The pause between the in-breath and the out-breath, or the pause between the out-breath and the in-breath. Which is longer? So you have to be very aware to be able to answer that question. And anyone who can't answer that question this evening will be in detention and will have to stay up longer tonight. So but what it does, it gets you more aware of this breath. So you watch what we call the complete breath, from the very beginning of the in-breath to the end of the in-breath, the pauses between the very beginning of the out-breath until it finishes. So that gives you hardly any space to wander off. You're just aware of the breath and nothing else in the whole world. Now sometimes people think, boring, watching breath go in, watching breath go out, how long do I have to do this? Breath go in, breath go out, this is so depressing, breath go in, breath go out, breath go in, when is this gonna... It doesn't work like that. You try it. And what happens, because you're focusing just on one simple thing, as I said yesterday, the energy of your mind starts to go into knowing. You get brighter, more aware, and more happy. You start to see this breath is actually very enjoyable. Strange, you might say. How can just watching the breath be so much fun? You ask people who've done this and say it's one of the most wonderful things they've ever done. It's called the delightful breath. When breathing in, breathing out is so wonderful, you're just having a great time. That is when you see people sitting here and they're missing breakfast, they're missing lunch, and they're sitting here not because they're forcing themselves to, it's because they're having just too much fun. This is where the meditation starts to take off. When you get to that stage of the delightful breath, the breathing in is so nice. Breathing out. Give me more. Breathing in. That was nice. Breathing out. Try to describe what it's like. But that's what it's like, having a wonderful time. That is an important stage of the meditation. Not a stage you aspire to, just something which happens when you start to get peaceful and the energy starts to go into the right place, into the knowing. The knowing wakens up and you're just happier and what you see is more beautiful. So there you are watching this delightful breath. In fact, it's so delightful. And you're getting more and more peaceful. There's hardly any difference between the in-breath and the out-breath. It's just breath, that's all. And that is a very important stage in the meditation. You're just watching a delightful breath, and there's hardly any difference. And because nothing much is changing, hardly any difference between the in-breath and the out-breath, it disappears. That's the point where you've left the body, the five senses have quieted down. They have disappeared and you've just left with the sixth sense, which is this beautiful mind. If you don't get the delight first of all, before the body disappears, usually what happens is you don't really know what to watch. You get a bit confused. It's just emptiness, darkness, you don't know what's going on. Which is why it's more important to develop this delightful breath before with their expansion. If you have a delightful breath, it means your mind is energized. So the natural thing, what happens once the breath has done its job and disappears, you see these beautiful lights in the mind. These are called the nimittas. These beautiful lights appear. You want to be sitting down here and it's just like a flashlight in front of you. Or like a car headlight, or like the moon, and really bright. When people experience that for the first time, they always say, "Wow, somebody must be shining a light into this room." But look, the road outside does not go, it goes parallel to this room. There's no way a car headlight can come into this room. And we don't use flashlights here. So anyone who sees this light in this room through this retreat, there's no other explanation. It is a real, authentic nimitta. Well done. Probably human beings these days, they're so negative about themselves that sometimes they think, "I can't get a nimitta, not me. I've only just started meditating. I'm a bit of a scallywag. I've got a mistress which my wife doesn't know about yet. Or, you know, I spend too much money and debt trouble, I haven't told my wife," whatever it is. Sometimes people have such a negative view about themselves. And when these things happen, they think, "Oh, no, it can't be me. Not me getting the minister." It is. Well done, enjoy it. A beautiful life comes in your mind. And usually at that time, not always, but usually, you will not be able to feel the body, hear sounds. All those five senses are vanished. Now you've got this beautiful light in your mind. Don't be afraid. Don't be doubtful. It's just part of the meditation. The first time it comes up, it usually doesn't last very long. At least you've got a glimpse. But it comes up next time. You relax more. Leave it alone. Your job is always to be the observer. Don't do things. Just be a passive observer. The more still you are, the more stable is that light in the mind. The more you move, the more that moves and disappears. Remember stillness. That is really what we are aiming for. To be more and more and more still. But don't worry, if you don't see that light from this meditation retreat, you will see that light one day. You know what I'm talking about? Everybody sees that light when they die. When you park it, when you kick the bucket, and all these other words we have for dying. You've all heard those stories, maybe some of you had those experiences yourself, of dying, leaving your body, floating out of the body, and eventually going towards this beautiful light. Don't have to be a Buddhist, Christians, Muslims, atheists, everybody has that experience at a certain time. People nowadays, because of great advances in medicine, you bring them back again so they can actually tell the tale. This is what it was like. That's why it's a great time to live now, because we've got evidence for these things. You know why you see that light when you die? Because your five senses stop at that time of your death process. This is what happens in meditation. But you don't have to worry. In meditation, you do not die, you come back straight away. You don't go out of your body, it's just another form of the five senses stopping and you start to see that beautiful light in the mind. Very, very pleasant. And perfectly safe. So safe that many people have had these terrible diseases. Other cancers, and what's the other story? That's right, the fellow with psoriasis. This was one of the worst, it was actually not one of the worst cases of a skin rash I've ever seen in my life. This poor man was covered head to toe, literally. And he came to one of my retreats in Perth in a rubber face mask. And he said, "I have to wear this just to stop me scratching my face. Because this rash is all over me. I've tried doctors, specialists, psychologists. Nothing has worked. I'm going to give meditation a shot just to see." But he said, "Please excuse me for wearing this mask. I'm not a bank robber. I'm not Batman. I'm just psoriasis now." like a terrible itch. And he said, also, please, I apologize if I have to leave the first study. It's just because it's just so much torture, I can't really stand just sitting still without scratching or doing something. And I'm being tormented by this itch throughout all of my body. And he showed me part of his body. And it looked disgusting. It's this rash. Those of you who had an itchy rash on a part of your body, imagine every inch of your skin you've got there. It's disgusting. I had so much sympathy for him. But I'm really pleased. The guy lasted the whole 9 days of this retreat. And I was so impressed with him. I said, why, you got so much endurance? He said, no, it's not endurance. Have a look. And he showed me. It all disappeared. There's only a tiny band on his ankles. And he said, that's absolutely nothing. Maybe other people would be upset by that, but not me. And he said it's like being taken out of a torture cell. And you can imagine just how happy he felt. And it wasn't just some myth. He showed me his body. It was free. And it was the first time being free in I don't know how many months of this terrible psoriasis. So it's got huge health benefits when you go into these limited stages. You don't have to be afraid at all. When you're out of the way and you're getting to these stages where the five senses have dropped down, you are so safe, so great for your health and your energy. When you come out afterwards, you feel like you can, you know, even as a 61-year-old, that's what I am, I can run the London Marathon and win it too. That's how fast you feel. It's a huge amount of energy. So it's a wonderful thing to do. So when it comes up, the reason I'm saying that, do not be afraid. It's a brilliant, wonderful thing to do. And number two, don't be excited either. Because sometimes people think, nimitta, I got nimitta, woohoo, yeah. Shut up, don't spoil it. Wonderful things happen, so just be as good as you possibly can and enjoy it to the max. That's what happens with the nimittas. After nimittas, that's the next stage is the jhanas. But I'll talk about those later on. But don't just think, oh, maybe that's for those people who can keep the eight precepts later on. It's not just for those people. It's for everybody. You'd be amazed sometimes. Sometimes the novice people, the people who haven't meditated much before, the people who just, you know, spend their time just swimming in the pool, and, oh, I'll just come and meditate when I jump arms here. Even those people sometimes get it. It's not so much how much you've meditated, but how you meditate. How well you follow the instructions. If you follow the instructions well, you too can get this incredible nimitta. That really inspires you. Not just inspires you, but it also shows you what meditation can do and how powerful and blissful and wonderful it is. Basically, it gets you addicted to meditation. It's a wonderful thing to get addicted to. Gives you more peace and happiness and fulfillment than anything else you've ever done in your life. That's why I'm not teaching you. You see how seamless it is? You start with something easy, just being in the present moment. You go to watching the breath, yeah, you can do that. Watch the breath go in, watch the breath go out. And just almost without any difficulty, I showed you how you get through the beautiful nimitta stages. It's that easy. And it happens. But the problem is, every time I start to describe these things, people get so much craving. Oh yeah, I want to. Other people have got these things, but I haven't. It's unfair. Okay, I'm going to really try this time. No more messing around. No more going to the pool. No more sleeping. No more watching TV. I am going to really meditate now for the rest of this day. I'm not even going to have lunch. I'm going to sit here, nimitta or bust. And if that's what you think, I guarantee 100% you will bust. That's not how to do these things. Be kind and be gentle. So in other words, just keep it easy, little way. And usually these things happen when you least expect them. But when you're expecting, you're wanting something. And just keep the instructions. All you really need to do in the present moment, just be here. Letting the energy of peace grow and grow and grow. Just being quiet inside. You know how you can stop talking with your mouth? You could do the same thing with your mind. Perfectly. Be still. Inside. Until there's not even a thought happening inside. Just like you just experienced the space between my words. Isn't that beautiful? That's a silence. It's not that hard. All that thinking, leave it till after the retreat. If you really have things to think about, give yourself a time of the day. Maybe you might call it 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock is my thinking time. Get all the thinking out of the way and the rest of the day is sharp. Well, whatever it is, just be quiet inside. And then watching the breathing. And as you watch the breathing, everything calms down. And then what I said, well, the very beginning of the in-breath and the end, find out which is the longest, between the in-breath and the out-breath, and the out-breath and the in-breath, which pause is the longest. And to see if you get the breath so smooth and so beautiful, just happily watching the breath go in and out. And then soon, the breath will disappear and see this beautiful light. And then you have a great fun. Okay, so that is a little instructions there for you. Are there any questions you have about this morning's talk? Yes. Go on, yeah. The Satipatthana Sutta. These are called the four foundations of mindfulness. And if you read number 118 of the Majjhima Nikaya, which is called the Anapanasati Sutta, there you will read with your own eyes the Buddha saying that anyone who completes this Anapanasati training, which is what I've just taught you, anyone who completes the Anapanasati also at the same time fulfills the four Satipatthana. So what I've just taught you is Satipatthana meditation. Because the Buddha said specifically, that's why I quoted it, number 118 of the Majjhima Nikaya, the Anapanasati Sutta, the Buddha said specifically, Anapanasati, Satipatthana are one and the same. You fulfill Anapanasati, you fulfill Satipatthana. That's why sometimes people think, I make this up by myself. Every now and again, I quote the suttas, sometimes in Pali, just to impress people that I know what I'm talking about. I'm not just one who makes it up, I'm also a scholar as well. So you can look it up for yourself. Did you bring any of these books with us? The Buddha's words. Okay, yeah, it's only an anthology, not the sort of full text. But it's there, you can look it up when you get back. Sorry, Anapanasati Sutta. Any other questions we have? Yes. Yeah, sometimes it is because you may get a bit excited. And when you get excited, that means that your heartbeat just gets abnormal, and then that's when you begin to notice it. The usual heartbeat, how often do you notice that during the day? Maybe when your girlfriend is sitting next to you, maybe. But usually, it's such a common heartbeat that you don't notice it anymore. It's only when it gets out of the ordinary. And that means a little bit of excitement, so you just calm down, and then the heartbeat you don't even notice. So just when that happens, just relax, or you're just getting a bit excited because maybe meditation is happening and you're getting somewhere. Because if you calm down your heartbeat too much, you really calm it down, so just beating in, beating out. You know, when that stops, then you are in trouble. It's okay when the breathing disappears, when the heartbeat disappears, then maybe it's a different thing. So a lot of times it's been exciting. Yes? Exactly. Yes, that's... Okay. Now, number one, what you're saying is very true. Remember that your brain is mostly occupied by visual stimuli. So imagine when all that part of the brain, it doesn't need to attend to visual stimuli anymore. It's got all that capacity free. So whatever you taste, smell, feel in your body, or even hear, you can hear with greater sensitivity. That's natural. That's what happens when you take away sight. The brain goes into sound and other things. So that's also why when you come in and come out of this room, because you can meditate at any time, I ask everyone to please do what we call in meditation, the burglar practice. So as you come in, if somebody else is meditating here, you've got to imagine you're a burglar sneaking into somebody's house. And you walk so carefully. You make one sound, and they will call the police, and you'll go to jail for a long time. And I've been visiting Changi Jail, it's not a nice place to go to. Which is why many burglars in Singapore are great meditators. They could be if they get their peace out. Because they can walk so quietly. They can open and close the door and no one hears. And they can sit down on the chair and no one knows they've come. No one knows they've gone. Not like some of these people, it's like an elephant coming into the room. You sit down, bang, rustle, scrape, sneeze. Wow, it's like a whole army has come into the room. It's only one meditator. So, if you practice like a burglar when you come in and go out, I'm not saying that this should be your profession when you go home. I say that you can actually come in and going out without disturbing anybody. That's a great practice in mindfulness, but it's also compassion for everybody else who's meditating. Because imagine you come in this room and you make a noise. The person sitting next to you is just on the edge of becoming enlightened, and you stop them. Wow, that's really bad karma. Imagine if that was the man of Buddha sitting under the Bodhi tree. And one of you decided to come and sit next to him. That's a little bag. No, he knows Buddha. So try to be very calm and very peaceful and quiet. But you can't be perfect. People are always making noises. Which is why Ajahn Chah, again, his teaching, he once told us, monks, it's not the sound that disturbs you. It's you who disturbs the sound. Really wonderful teaching. They make a noise. And it's gone in a second. But if we get upset by it, why do they make a noise? I'm going to tell Ajahn Brahm about this girl. She's always making a noise. She should be blacklisted. She should never be allowed to go in a retreat again. If she does, she should go and sit in the corner where she doesn't make other noises for other people. She is just a pain in the backside, always a pest, always slamming the door, and I have to sleep in the same room as her. She always snores. We should get rid of this pest. And now you just disturb the noise. The noise finished a long time ago. You keep thinking about it, getting angry. And you can't stop the noise outside. You certainly can do something with your reaction. But if somebody does make a noise, be kind. Have compassion. I don't know why they made a noise, but you know, that's life. So as soon as the noise disappears, you don't even think about it. Then the noise isn't discerned anymore. If there is a very loud noise, it's just a noise, that's all. It may be piercing, but it's gone very quickly. It's just very quickly. Let peace be kind to you, even with loud noises. But please, again, try and be very sensitive to people when they're meditating. And even just walk around them rather than right in front of them. Because sometimes only you want to meditate. And you almost get there and somebody makes a noise. It's also one of the reasons why we don't have bells on this retreat. Because so many times that happens to me. Sometimes I'm really getting deep, very peaceful, really getting into deep meditation. Bang! Gong! Okay, get up, we do some chanting now. Oh, that really sucked, that was really terrible. I was just having such a wonderful time and the bell stopped me going deeper. Or other times, you know, what it might be like, oh, your legs are hurting and you want to go to the toilet. Don't, please ring the bell, I want to go. And for one reason or another, you know, I'm 5 minutes late, like I was this morning. I had this nice meditation, so I rang the bell at 25 to instead of 5:30. Sometimes that happens to me and I'm really angry. Didn't that monk know how much it was hurting? And I had to sit an extra 5 minutes because they rang the bell too late. So these days we don't have any bells. And when you want to get up, you get up. When you want to sit down, you sit down. You keep it natural. That is the real meaning of no bell silence. I'm glad you got that joke. Because if you have no bell silence, you have to have no bell silence first, and then some of you will win the Nobel Peace Prize. So it's great having no bells on retreats. I don't know how it's going there, but I invented these no bells on retreats, so they could be natural. Maybe even 4 or 5 years ago, seeing the two leading meditation teachers over in the US, that was Jack Kornfield and Joseph Goldstein. So I told them, wow, why didn't we think about that? Because they have the same problem. If you try and regiment people, everybody has to sit for 45 minutes or an hour, half an hour. Some people want to sit longer, some people want to sit shorter. So the retreat should be adapted to people rather than people adapt to a retreat. That's much better. So no bells at all. Any other questions before we have a tea break, which is toilet break? So keep your hands off the cakes and the sweets and everything else. And no tea or coffee unless you really, 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 really need it. We have a tea break and we come back for guided meditation and then we'll do some more questions after. Okay, so toilet break, everybody. And somebody can bring the question box in because they're building up, so I'll do half an hour questions before we have the real tea break.